Greetings, football-loving P1s. I've got news. Soccer90.com is about to become a full-fledged sponsor of the Kick Around. Not just somebody who advertises on the podcast, but the sponsor of the broadcast show on Saturdays, and you're going to hear a lot more about them on the ticket. Why? Well, not just because they paid us, but actually because Soccer90.com is the finest place to go shopping for all of the gear and stuff you're looking for the clubs or national teams that you love the most from all around the world. Premier League, Liga MX, Bundesliga, Serie A, and national teams from around the globe. And if you're a little bit of old school, you know what? They've even got some pretty sweet Dallas Tornado tees for those of us who love the old days. And shopping online is fun, but don't forget, there is an actual brick-and-mortar Soccer 90 store up in Frisco on Main Street right next door to the Hall of Fame. It's kind of cool to go in and touch and feel and see all this stuff in person. It is quite the grocery store of soccer stuff. And don't forget, you good P1s get a discount when you shop on the website. Just use the term KICKAROUND at checkout and you'll get 20% off your purchase. Some exclusions apply. We love Soccer90.com. You love Soccer90.com. It's Soccer90.com.
It's time for the KICKAROUND, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport. Don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, two guys who can never go the full 90, Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
Pulisic one way, and Kai Havertz the other. He's played in Christian Pulisic! Another American goal in the European Champions League. And Chelsea are a whole lot closer to where they want to be.
Howdy ho, P1s, and welcome to today's Kick Around. Look at us, back in a groove. Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sport Radio, 96.7 and 1310. The Ticket, where you, the good, sweet P1, can sit around, talk some soccer and all that implies. Hi, don't forget, you can find us on our kick-ass website, thekickaround.com. I'm Peter, for those unfamiliar or new here, and also here in this broadcast studio is world-renowned and noted soccer expert, Andy Dalton Swift.
Thank you, Peter. Good to see you this fine Saturday. Enjoyed the game between your team and a bottom-dweller team this morning.
Yes, Manchester United and Watford we will talk about here in a little bit. We will also spend some time, yes, discussing war. Yeah. What is it good for? Specifically, how what's going on over with the Russians in Ukraine will impact a lot of things, but specifically World Cup qualifying, some of this club play that's all supposed to happen here in the next few weeks, and what it could mean down the road if it gets worse. We'll talk about that. Plus, today, by the way, Andy, happy new MLS season to you, sir.
This is year 26, 27?
Yes! I think it's 27. I think this is the 27th season. They've played 26, I think. They've been so weird about how they've mathed out and celebrated. Like, when they were doing the 25th anniversary,
it was a 26th season.
It was actually the 26th season, so I think we're going into the 27th season,
right?
Is what I think this is. At 4 o'clock today, over up at Toyota Stadium, FC Dallas will take on Toronto as the season for their season opener.
That's a tough, tough opponent to open up with because they have a new coach, Toronto does.
They do.
Bob Bradley.
But I don't know how good they are at point.
We'll talk.
And Buzz Carrick will be joining us to talk about that and the upcoming season. So we'll dive into all of that. What I wanted to start the show off with today.
Tell me.
Well, we got a bit of a odd shift here late because I wanted to talk about Leeds and Tottenham this morning.
Yeah.
But I do feel like we should just quickly mention, and we'll talk more about this later in the show, the Roman Abramovich statement that just came out in the last hour from Chelsea.
Right. The owner of Chelsea.
The owner of Chelsea.
The Russian owner of Chelsea.
The Russian oligarch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know,
here's very rich man.
from
Russia.
Yes, and the means in which he came to power in the breakup of the Soviet Union and became an oligarch is the stuff that I've read all sorts of articles and papers on, and I've never really been able to put my finger on if he's just a really, if he's one of those like movie villain kind of guys.
Or a savvy businessman.
Okay. I have a, but anyway, so today he did make a statement through the Chelsea, official Chelsea PR machine, and I'm trying to find it here so that I can read it to you, but the it ostensibly says that because he really loves Chelsea and really wants the best for the club, and without actually saying, because the English government has begun to restrict access to funding for Russians and specifically Russian-run businesses, he has decided to hand over
stewardship.
It says, that is why I am today giving trustees of Chelsea's charitable foundation the stewardship and care of Chelsea FC. Yeah.
He's trying to erase the Russian label, Russian-owned label from Chelsea because of what you mentioned, the financial repercussions that they would face and restriction and ability to get cash, basically.
But if he's still the owner...
Yeah, but it's his account, right? So there's another account set up independently of that as you know, it's like the non-for-profit organization.
This is where
your
expertise is valuable, Andy.
Non-for-profits like the NFL. Well, yeah. Anyway, sometimes corporations set up non-for-profit entities, side entities that handle a different bank account, and they do certain things that avoid them having tax liabilities and such. But those are usually set up to do stuff in the community and.
But I don't understand how what he does today fundamentally changes anything.
It basically
for
says
Chelsea
the bank account that runs the. My understanding, this is probably what they're trying to do, is change the source of funding. Yeah, of funds, so that they can maintain cash flow.
So Christian Pulisic's check will now come from somebody differently than.
Exactly.
Than a big red check.
Yeah. I think that's the goal here.
Interesting.
Even though they're labeling it a different way. They're saying he, you know, because of all the problems and the scrutiny, he doesn't want to like jeopardize the image and he wants to step aside so it doesn't hamper the ability to maintain good PR.
Super interesting. It's a very vague and weirdly worded statement. You understand it better than I do, at least in terms of what you, I'm assuming you're speculating on what
this
means.
Yes, of course. That's all. Yeah, of course, because you never, you never like completely say, you know what, the real reason
nobody
you're
sent
doing
Andy
something.
An email going, okay, so Andy, what we're going to do here.
No, plus they're not, they won't say in order to circumvent the financial restrictions the world is imposing on Russian leaders. You know, we are going to now change bank accounts, basically. So, but I mean, that's
it does it. And this is, again, we'll talk more about the possibilities of long term issues if this war gets bigger, longer, whatever. But it does beg the question at some point, does somebody like Abramovich get forced to sell the club?
Man, I just don't foresee it getting that bad, but you never know.
You never know.
Yeah.
All right. So I did wake up late this morning. I was supposed to get up a little before 6:30 to watch Leeds hosting Tottenham.
Woke up partying last night?
Well, no. I woke up about 25 minutes late.
Okay.
Turned on the television.
Sorry.
And it was already
3-0. Oh, so is
Spurs.
Is this part of the bit? Or no, for real?
No, that's
like,
literally
really
what
happened. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, Tottenham was already up 3-0, and I thought, why did I even bother to get up?
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's Leeds, right? Leeds are soccer cocaine. It's possible that they'll come back in the second half and do something crazy. But, look, you and I have some, I don't know if we have crow to eat, but you and I have some realities to face, which is you and I have been some of the biggest advocates and promoters of Bielsa as a coach.
Yeah, and I think I would maintain that at least I still am. Doesn't mean they're not having issues now, and a lot of them might be related to Bielsa. So,
well, I think that when you're missing all of these players, which are
critical
to their success, for him to continuously play that role of we're going to do what I think we need to do, and it's up to you as the players to fill those roles properly. and not try to alleviate the situation by making tactical changes and relenting, I think that's where it becomes a Bielsa issue.
Exactly. And Bielsa's system and his tactics and his approach to rosters and the game and all that, he's always walking a very thin line, right? A fine line.
Very.
And even when things are clicking, you know, Bielsa games, Bielsa coached teams, their games
are high wire.
4-3, 3-2, 6-5, you know, that kind of thing. So when things go south a little bit, this is what you get. You get thumped three straight times.
Well, they have given up 14 goals in their last three games between the 4-2 loss to United, the 6-0 drubbing midweek against Liverpool, and then 4-0 today against Spurs.
What was United doing giving up two goals?
I don't want to talk about that. My point is that after the game, we began to really start hearing the word spin that the odds of Bielsa remaining as manager were starting to come into question. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, it would be very Bielsa for him to just go, I'm sorry, this is my fault. I'm throwing myself on the sword.
Right. And he's done that before in other places. And I think that's the expectation, is that he probably wants to get ahead of any decision that might come down that might dismiss him. Now, Leeds management, this is not an easy, even the, like 80% of the managers in this situation probably will be let go, right?
Right.
A team facing this close to relegation, getting thumped like this with results, and not just these last three games, but over the last 2 or 3 months, they've been mediocre at best. But Bielsa's a little different. You know, he's a little bit of an icon now.
Well, and he's everything to that club.
Yeah. He brought him up after a long absence. He's had success with them. He's a strange and quirky fellow, but I think he's likable. Like, fan base likes him, likes his approach, his honesty. So I think management is having a hard time making that decision.
You just get the sense that there's a whole bunch of people in meetings with Bielsa going, could you just please stop throwing 10 players forward and just cover
just
a
little
bit.
Yeah.
Just get us through the rest of the season by playing a little more defensively. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's just not how Bielsa is wired. So the other part of this rumor that's running around is that the person likely to replace him would be one American, Jesse Marsh.
Right. Which I think would be a great hire, because not too different.
No.
Why? Why not?
Because American coaches, like American players, need to take a better moment to stop and look and measure the difference between opportunity and reality.
You're talking from Marsh's perspective. I'm talking from Leeds' perspective. And I think they're getting a manager in there that is not too dissimilar to the style that Bielsa plays,
right,
but a little bit more conducive to Premier League.
I know, but I don't want to see another American coach.
You're afraid that he's going to
get his foot in the door on a house that is already aflame.
Yeah, but
if he got that job in the summer, I'd be all for it. But getting it now, where they're likely to face the drop and get relegated, they will blame all of that on him, and he'll get fired in the summer.
You don't think it's like, man, there's only one way to go but up? You think there's still farther to go down? I mean, there is in the table, obviously.
I think between Newcastle's resurgence,
Burnley's
playing well.
There
are a lot of teams down there other than Norwich that have been floating around on the bottom of the ocean for a while that suddenly have found some buoyancy, and Leeds is not one of them. And I just don't know if that's a good move for Marsh. I love Jesse Marsh. I would love for him to get a really good opportunity.
I'd be excited for that.
But think of Bradley and Swansea. Think of Marsh's move to Leipzig and what a bad situation
I'm going to ask you, and, you know, be honest. Well, of course you're going to be honest, but really, who was a better coach at these two different times, Bradley heading to Swansea or Marsh now?
For sure. I agree with you. But again, I just worry. Look, this is me being an American wanting the best for American coaches and trying to prove out that American coaches can actually pull this stuff off. And what I don't want, I don't want American players doing is seeing opportunity. Oh, I get to go to Roma, or I get to go play at wherever. Mm-hmm. And then it just, because it's a bad situation to start off with, blows up in their face.
Yeah, and the problem would be, now that would be the second coach, and then would it make it harder for other coaches?
Like, I don't know how much longer Calvin Phillips has out hurt.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a hamstring issue. Bamford's foot issue is bad. They've got two or three other bad injury situations, and they're just a mess. And so I just, you know.
Even if Marsh doesn't do well, though, you got Chris Armas, like, just killing it over there.
What is your obsession with Chris Armas?
Isn't it funny that every time they go to the bench, you have Chris Armas in Regonk's ear? Just
is this payback for all of the years I made fun of the look-alike, the Klopp look-alike?
Isn't that funny, though? Don't you?
No, this feels like payback because I made fun of the guy dressed up and looking exactly like Jurgen Klopp on the Liverpool bench.
Oh, that assistant coach?
Yeah, the assistant coach that had the same hair.
That was funny.
The same glasses.
That was funny.
Looked just like Jurgen.
That was funny. Just
like he was going to take a bullet if there was an assassin in the stadium.
It's funny. Just like
they didn't know which Jurgen it was.
All right.
Yes. Chris Armas is very funny to see on the Manchester United bench. All right. We have run out of time for the segment, but when we come back, I do think we need to spend a few minutes before we get to United and Watford. We do need to talk about Spurs and what in the world is going on there next year on the Kick Around. Welcome back to the Kick Around. We'll talk a little Champions League and some other stuff here coming up later in the show, but first, on the heels of talking about the situation with Leeds, who again lost this morning, got thumped again, third game in a row, 14 goals in three games. Now, I get it that it's United, Tottenham, and another tough team, but that's a lot of goals.
Liverpool,
yeah. I also want to talk about what in the world is going on with Spurs.
More specifically, with their coach.
Well, not just that, but kind of the bizarre on and off form that this team goes through.
Jekyll and Hyde-ish, huh?
Going out and besting Manchester City and then turning around and blowing the next game, I guess, against Burnley, and then turning around and blowing out Leeds.
Yeah. And
and then there's a host of other results of run lately that, you know,
they
lost three games in a row and they're in the form table, they're not doing great.
Yeah, and then you have their nutty, I think it's fair to call him a little nutty, coach, Conte.
Yes.
Who, after a win, it's like, this is great, everything's figured out, this is the best team ever, I'm staying forever. And after a loss, this team sucks, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm great, but the players don't understand me, so I must leave, I must resign.
It's clear to me now that the club is only in for growing new players, not buying established players, all that stuff.
One quote basically said, it is my fault. I am not good because the players don't listen to how brilliant I am.
But wasn't all of this as predictable as Marvel movie
plot?
Yes,
of course. Yes.
I mean, we all knew that. It's the same thing that we knew when they hired Mourinho, that it was just going to end awful,
right,
with him getting into it with all of his players, throwing all the players under the bus.
I don't think we expected things to get to this point, this peaky with his emotions, not even a weekly basis, on a every other day basis, this early.
Yeah.
Right?
You're absolutely right. And what's really strange in watching the performances over the last three games is just the oddity and where this team kind of switches on and off.
Right. And so I'm wondering, is part of that him? Like, they're not used to this volatility inside the locker room.
I think it's not dissimilar to a lot of teams, United being one, which is if they get confronted with a team that plays a low block and just lays back, they struggle breaking that down. Mm-hmm. If they play a team like City or Leeds that come at them, they get to use all of this wonderful speed and counterattacking ability that they have.
I mean, good at that.
I mean, you watch that game today, and you watch Son. He is so fast. And there was the goal that he scored. Did he score that
fourth
goal?
One.
I think the one that, you know, Kane's gotten into this thing where he's dropping way deep back in the midfield, and then retaining possession, and then looking up and watching Son make these beautiful runs and dropping them over the top.
It's that fourth goal.
Yeah, fourth goal.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
And, you know, it's like, and you could just see the Leeds defenders like freaking out that they had to put up with that all day.
Right. Yeah, and especially the style they play, because they're often exposed, and you expose those two, it's even worse. So, but my question to you is that, like, when this team, you know, they lose to Burnley, or the prior result that wasn't very good, and the coach comes out and says, I don't know what I'm doing here, this team is terrible, we don't have direction. What does that do?
I can't imagine that helps anything.
Right. Because, or they just tune that out.
Because I'm always of the impression that players love playing for Antonio Conte.
Yeah, because of his raw emotion and, you know, he's all about them. And,
but I certainly do get the sense. And again, I'm not there and, you know, I can only go by what I read and online or watch on television. I just don't get the sense that the connection with the players that I have seen him have with his clubs in Serie A here in London. I just don't, it just doesn't
it's
seem
a little bit
that
more
way.
Aloof.
Yeah, it's almost like he got there and was like, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah, or he's in there with the guys and say, look, I'm going to go off because I'm trying to put pressure on management to go buy players and just, but then there's like, what's wrong with us? You know, why don't you support us?
Well, here's the thing. So they win today 4-0. And don't forget, Spurs has several games in hand to play, and they are now up to 7th with 42 points. They're essentially tied with West Ham on 42 points with games in hand.
Yeah.
Arsenal still, obviously, didn't get to play today because their game against Liverpool was postponed due to tomorrow's Carabao Cup final against Chelsea. Mm-hmm. They're in 5th with 45 points. And then Manchester United, which we'll get to now, at home against Watford, can only manage a 0-0 draw.
Yeah, and when it comes to those four, remember that West Ham and United both have European matches. Arsenal and Spurs are spared of that. So that's a little bit of an extra weight that the two Uniteds, the Hammers. So
the one thing to keep in mind is that I believe I'm saying this correctly. Arsenal's games in hand are against Liverpool and Tottenham.
Okay.
So that
those are tough.
You know, this is conversation because of COVID and cancellations and postponements. What typically is very easy to kind of read as a schedule and a table and see where things are going is made extremely difficult this season.
Yeah.
Because right now Arsenal has three games in hand, you know, the game they'll play late, right.
And to that point, Peter, is that those games in hand are going to have to be played when they're playing other games too. So it's almost like they're going to be playing a compressed schedule as well.
Yes.
And rotation is also going to be a thing.
But as we get into the conversation about what team is really going to end up in fourth, while Arsenal has games in hand that are difficult, Manchester United's march, the march that Manchester United is about to face is brutal. So not only do they have that return leg against Atletico Madrid in a few weeks, but they now have to go to Manchester City on the 6th. Then they have Spurs at home on the 12th. And then Liverpool at Anfield on the 20th. That is their next three Premier. That's why today's game against Watford was so important to get 3 points.
Yeah, so they go off and get the 3 points, right?
No.
At home.
No. They dominate a game. They have all the possession. They have all the opportunities. But when you've got a front line of Ronaldo and Alanga and Pogba.
Fernandes.
And Bruno, and all of this on here, and you can't finish these opportunities.
How many shots did United take?
I think
22.
I think it was 22.
22. How many did Watford take?
It probably.
Zero.
No, Watford had a shot.
They did?
Maybe not on goal.
Ah, okay.
But I know they had some shots. Okay. And so that is a real problem that Ragnick has, is that he's really struggling. I mean, I have no idea what this team strengths or weaknesses are. They can't break a low block to save their life.
Too much having to play wide and cross the ball in today too, right? And that's part of not being able to break the low block.
There were a whole lot of things that I thought were wrong with the game today. Bruno Fernandes, do you remember when Bruno first got to the team and I used to sound like I was being ridiculous and kind of like throwing out the forewarning
that he's going to give the ball away too much?
That at some point, people are going to start complaining about how often he turns the ball over.
Yeah, but I thought more than anything was the finishing. He had two clear opportunities. He needed to put one of those back.
I agree, but there were other. Over the course of the last few games, Bruno has not been top.
Sharp.
Ronaldo is clearly an issue. I don't know if you've seen.
He hit the post today, though. I mean, you know.
He also blocked his teammate's shot because he wasn't moving. He was just standing in the six-yard box.
Also, he gave Bruno a goal on a platter. Yeah. So look, when it comes to Ragnick too, I don't know if you can blame the coach when the team goes out and has that much possession, 22 shots. What else can the coach do?
Nothing.
At some point, the players have to execute.
Probably nothing. But again, I'm not even sure how much of a Ragnik team this really is. They don't press very well. They're not a super good team at pressing. They don't do it in a very unified. And I can't really tell
that
you
more
what
than anything is an issue.
It is.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you what they're good and I know I can tell you what they're bad at, but I can't tell you what their identity is.
Yeah,
and you'll
right.
hear that a lot. Like I can't look at say, well, they're really good at counterattacking or tiki taka or whatever it is.
Spending money.
And when you look at United's schedule, you do begin to see how quickly this thing can become an issue because they may get to the end of the March and everybody has passed them because they have, other than West Ham United, they have the hardest schedule.
So you got Manchester United with a very tough schedule, like you said, Arsenal with tough games to make up in their makeup games. West Ham has the toughest schedule and Spurs has a nut coach in that situation.
Chelsea has the easiest schedule coming up.
Chelsea's going to finish third. They're going to be fine. It's four teams vying for one spot here. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening. And all four teams are flawed heading into this stretch.
Well, ironically, Arsenal's next game is against Watford. Then they're home against Leicester and then home against Liverpool and then away at Aston Villa.
Who's that?
This is Arsenal.
Arsenal.
So, you know, they've got a bit. That's not that, you know, these next four games for them are also tricky. But their schedule tends to lighten up as the season goes on in comparison to Tottenham, United, and West Ham.
I find it's so difficult, too, with all the teams having a different amount of games played to kind of like see where we are with things.
Yeah, and then the other thing that we should talk about real quickly before we go is what's going on at the bottom of the table. Mm-hmm. Because the other games today that happened were Newcastle beat Brentford. It was the return of Christian Eriksen. He did get some time today. That was a wonderful thing to see. But an early red card to Brentford put them behind the ball.
11th.
Yeah, that's bad. And Newcastle wins again, guys.
So,
they are undefeated in their last five and are now up to 14th place.
Yeah, they look now clear of relegation. They're in good shape. And kudos to you. You called it. I thought they were going to keep struggling. Turned it around.
Aston Villa got a 2-0 win over Brighton at Brighton. Ollie Watkins scored in the 68th minute. Palace and Burnley withdraw. So Burnley gets another point. So Burnley now is up to 18th place with 21 points. Watford got a point today, 19 points. And Norwich at the bottom, who continue to struggle mightily. They lost yesterday to Southampton at 17 points.
But the story is
Everton and Leeds.
Yeah.
And even Brentford to a degree. Like you can make an argument that because Brentford's only 3 points ahead of Burnley at this, you know, and
with
Burnley has a ton
played.
Of games in hand.
Yeah.
Everton does too.
Yeah.
Burnley's only played 24 games. We may now have a race at the top of the table again, finally, with City and Liverpool. That may be a thing.
Yeah.
But we are definitely going to have a lot of fun watching what happens at the bottom of the table as we come up in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
All right. When we come back, we do need to dig into what's been going on in the Champions League. So we'll do that next here on the Kick Around. Another season of Major League Soccer is here. And a little bit later today, Football Club Dallas kicks off its season, so Buzz Carrick from ThirdDegree.net will be joining us here a little bit to preview aforementioned season. But first, let's continue to talk a little bit of Premier League and also some Champions League. The other game today that took place, that actually, you know, I thought this was an entertaining game because Everton came out ablaze.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Lampard had his troops charged up. Working hard, playing tough.
He just put on the board in the locker room, the standings, the table. He's like, guys, look.
Hey, guys, could you guys try real hard today, please? Run real fast and tackle tough. Yeah, I thought Everton, man, I was, you know, Sam's not here today. Sam is our official show Everton fan. And I thought for sure somehow Everton was going to get the result at home against City. And he wasn't going to be able to be here to gloat on you about that.
I was going to be thankful. We wanted that City team to lose because, you know, Liverpool math.
Well, City, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I was certainly somebody several weeks ago. I can't remember. I think after they beat Chelsea, I was already anointing them Premier League champions of the season.
You and everybody else.
Okay. Well, that's probably for
really
a reason, Andy. But they stumbled against Tottenham.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. They, you know, they bossed the game against Everton. They just couldn't
beat. It wasn't even a low block because
Everton came out. Yeah,
they came out. It was a good game, and it was really unfortunate the way Everton lost too, because you hold out for those 85 minutes, whatever it was. You know, was it 83rd?
Yeah, it was around there. It was late in the
80s. And then it was just such a stupid goal, a stupid way to concede a goal.
Well, it's, you know, the ball gets played in from the left and it deflects off one dude's legs. And then Keane is struggling to, like, reach it. And he kind of just puts it on a play. I actually think that if it hadn't gotten to Keane, I think Foden would have been offside.
Ah, maybe.
I think. Yeah, I'd have to go back and watch it again. But it was just a tap Keane, in for Phil Foden.
Yeah, Keane was thrown off because of the guy that touched it right before, because I think Keane would have had a better handle on the ball had it just gone straight through. Who was the teammate that touched it? The first guy?
Holgate? Yeah. Did it come off Holgate's legs or something like that? Yeah.
So, and then there was a VAR situation at the end. For those that watched the game and may not know ultimately why the VAR decision was... or why VAR decided it wasn't a handball, because we all saw the replay and it was clearly a handball. And we were all very annoyed that they went back and just awarded the...
it was very confusing.
The offside, but this is why.
VAR.
They stopped the play on an offside to review the VAR.
Which happened after the handball.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. Yes. So there's that handball situation. They keep playing. It's offside. They stop the game to review VAR. So they stop on an offside call.
Right, but the board and the word from VAR is we're checking for a handball.
Which they should have done.
And they go on and they show, how many different camera angles did they show? It's like, why are you taking so long to call the penalty kick that's clearly a handball? All this time goes by, and then the referee puts his hand straight up in the air and points for an offside restart. Yeah. And everybody's looking, he's like, why did they not give the handball?
Right. And we're all assuming it's the offside that was called.
Initially,
and that's where we restart the game.
No, that's not what it was. It was an offside that happened prior
that they found
to Rodri handling the ball.
Yeah,
yes.
they found that when they were reviewing.
And they found that because what they'll do in the VAR is if they see something like a foul or a handball in the box, is they will then go back and make sure there wasn't a foul or an offside leading up to that moment that needs to be adjudicated beforehand. And that's what happened here. But again, this is one of those weird soft spots in how VAR works because it. If you're in the stadium, especially after they put up on the video board checking for handball, and then they don't give it, you just assume they were like, well, how is that not a handball? Yeah. I saw it. It just, that part of the VAR process needs to be handled better. Almost to the point where I kind of want to see them go NFL style and make the referee turn to the camera and explain what in the world is going on. Yeah. You know how they do that in basketball now? They've got a little camera on the table and they make the referee look into they should do that.
Okay, why don't you write a letter to the UIL?
I'll write a sternly worded letter. But so here's the deal. So now City is back up 6 points. They got to, you know, Liverpool does have the game in hand.
We don't need to do the Liverpool math again. I mean, Liverpool got, they're 3 points, even games, right? So you're not going to argue with me.
So
now,
hold on.
Right?
I got to tell the good P1s a quick story. So we didn't have a show last week, but. When Tottenham, I was not watching, I was recording the Tottenham Man City game last weekend, and I was trying my darndest to avoid the result, and the game was over right around 1 o'clock, whatever it was, and suddenly I feel my phone vibrate in my back pocket, and I pull it out, and I look, and it says, Andy Swift has sent you a text. I was like, oh, Andy sent me a text. I wonder what it says, not thinking that you would do this to me. And all it said was hashtag Liverpool math.
That's right. Because I was
I do math in my head so I can pee in a urinal.
With that result. Because at that point, then things were all even in terms of games played.
Yeah.
Liverpool was three points back with one game to play against.
Are you
going to
put
So it's just it's a race again. That's all I want.
You're a gambler. You're a risk taker. You going to put some money on this?
I don't know. I'm not.
What are you waiting for?
I just want from you the acknowledgement that it's a race again.
It is. And Thank you. I'm excited. Okay. I didn't want this to be a runaway season where we didn't have anything to talk about. I host a fartin' soccer show for Christ's sake. I want it to be exciting.
Right. Okay.
I don't care
just
that it's
rub
Liverpool.
It in my face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peter?
Well, we have the race for fourth. Your team is very much involved in that. We have Everton avoiding relegation. That's going to be exciting.
All right. So let's talk a little Champions League while we're at it, because there's been some of that. The first legs of the round of 16 have happened. And it's weird to me that one of the loudest pieces of noise that has taken place are the pro away goal rule fans crying over the fact that it no longer exists.
I'm an away goal rule fan. I'm not crying about it. I wish it was still in place.
Why?
We've had this discussion like this, the first few months of the show. That was the thing. Remember, we had that as a storyline. Well, you and I.
I don't remember you being
this.
The fan of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I enjoy it.
Because when PSG and Real Madrid were playing, everybody was like, this game is boring because there's no away goal rule.
Right.
That's not true.
Yes.
Because the inverse is, if you have it, then the home team in the second leg, if they've got the lead, will just defend more.
No, not necessarily, because they're at home. They have to go out and get the win.
So stupid. Look, my team would benefit from the away goal rule at this point. They got an away goal at Atletico.
I know. They would. So would mine.
By the way, how United completely lucked out and got the away. I mean, here's the thing about Atletico Madrid I don't get, which is they are doing all of those things they do so very well.
They are the masters of low block.
But I kept saying to somebody I was texting back and forth, and I'm like, look, as bad as Manchester United are playing, the way Atletico are playing they're just waiting for United to break one opportunity and score and tie this game, and that's exactly what happened. And I don't get why. Because one of the things I've been hearing lately is that if United's going to get a coach next year, should they consider Simeone as an option?
I've heard that too. Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I don't
no,
want...
That's not United's way of playing.
I couldn't stand supporting a team that plays that defensively.
Yeah.
I don't think they're very effective.
I mean, it's the one team that they do the low block so well. They're so lethal on the counter. They've gotten results. They've gotten the Champions League finals. They won La Liga. I mean, it's the one team that does it really well. And if you're a fan of Atletico, it's how you can survive in La Liga with Real and with Barcelona. It's playing that way.
Yeah.
So if you're a fan of that team, you're okay with it.
City beat Sporting 5-0. Look at Liverpool going to Milan and beating up on Inter 2-0. Just mopping the floor with those Italians.
Yeah, that game ended up being a little bit easier than I thought it would be. I mean, it's no game's easy, but you know what I'm saying. I was surprised Liverpool came out with a 2-0 win there.
Chelsea won their game 2-0. Bayern and Salzburg. This was a surprising result.
It is. Everybody's like, oh my God, you know, Salzburg has a chance. No, they don't have a chance. They're going to go back to Munich. And
PSG did end up winning that game 1-0 over Real Madrid.
So if PSG doesn't advance and...
Mbappe situation was... In that game.
The goal, you mean?
Yeah, the goal.
The situation.
Nuts. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the situation in that it's weird because Real Madrid's probably mad that he scored in this game, but they're also like, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah.
This is the guy coming here next season.
He's going to knock us out of the Champions
League.
But yeah. And Messi was not good at all. And he's allowed to have a bad game every once in a while. So if Pochettino doesn't take PSG far, like winning this, he's at United next year?
I don't know. And there seems to be so much debate over whether or not he's going to come in, because does he want to work for Ragnik as the consultant? Is it more likely they'll bring in Ten Hag in?
Right. That's a great point. So then does he go to Spurs? Because Conte's not going
to. You know, maybe they'll help a dream of yours come true and name Chris Armas the new. Since you're the huge Chris Armas fan.
Come on. Do not tell me you don't like...
But here's the reality. I mean, here we are. We're getting ready to go into these second legs, and all of the Premier League teams, United included, now are in the driver's seat, because you could see United beating Atletico at home.
At home, sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. And this is really going to play out where, you know, the next round's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah. I don't think we're not set up to see any real surprises coming out of this round of 16. I think all the favorites should end up advancing. Benfica, Ajax, that was a toss-up. So, you know, whoever comes out of that is...
And then the last thing we need to spend a couple of minutes on is the absolutely devastating scenes. Weston McKennie breaking his foot, playing against Villarreal.
Yep.
Midweek for Juventus, he is now going to miss the next qualification window for the U.S. men's national team at the worst possible time.
Yeah. Costa Rica, Mexico, and Panama at home are the games the U.S. has.
Away at Mexico, away at home against Panama, and then away at Costa Rica.
To finish up without Weston McKennie, who arguably was the best player.
Without question. Yeah. And I went into full American freakout mode because I was like, okay, well, maybe nobody wants to go to Qatar anyway.
And then what I said was, look at Canada without their best player, Alphonso Davies.
It's a little easier to cover up left back than it is center mid.
The left side. He plays the left side for Canada, sir.
He's a left fullback.
He plays the left side. Hey, real quick, Europa League
just
news.
Like Canada, you stick your best player in the easiest position.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. West Ham gets Sevilla now that they're in the next phase. So that's a tough opponent. Barca has advanced, but guess who else has advanced? Barca, by the way, they will play Galatasaray. But guess who advanced and took care of Dortmund? Just slapped Dortmund away.
Like, I saw this, but now I forgot.
We're advancing.
Was it
Rangers?
Rangers,
out of Scotland.
Yes. I did see this. That is fascinating. I am quietly rooting for a West Ham Barcelona European Cup final.
I think the Hammers have as good a chance as any of the other 16 teams in Europa League to get to that final.
Would you feel like you were reading a Sports Onion headline if you saw that West Ham beat Barcelona at a European Cup final?
Yeah, right. It's possible.
That would be fantastic. Yeah. That would be a lot of good.
And Barca, that playing in Turkey, that's not going to be easy.
Yeah. Let's see. So those next round of games don't start until the week of the 8th. United and Atletico don't play until the 15th. So you got a little bit of waiting to do until those pick back up, but those should be fun. All right, when we come back, we're going to hop on the phone with the great Buzz Carrick because it is now time for another season of Major League Soccer next here on The Kick Around. Man, you're going to want to stick around and listen as Andy and I break out our geopolitical footballing prowess. Yes, before the end of the show. We're going to wow you with our knowledge.
Or not.
Hey, Andy, do you find it mysterious that we are now nigh upon just minutes, if not a couple of hours away from the start of the FC Dallas new season, and yet here we are with our two-hour soccer-specific radio show on the number one radio station in the Dallas market, and we've not received a single email or phone call or inquiry, you, me, or Sam, from anybody at the club asking if they can have somebody on the team to discuss the new season?
How do you really feel about this, Peter?
I'm just wondering. It just seems weird to me.
FC Dallas.
Wahoo! That you wouldn't want to.
Well,
it is
a 4 o'clock kickoff today, maybe.
And what's really bizarre is they just named a new ambassador of the club, Kenny Cooper, who's not doing anything today. I mean, this is like literally his job, so.
What do you mean he's not doing anything today? It's like opening day in 45 minutes.
I would think wanting to be on the ticket a couple of hours before the
he's
game.
He's ambassadoring at the stadium, shaking
How
hands,
kissing
babies.
How about ambassadoring with the radio show?
Putting roses on lapels.
All right. Live from the Diamond Factory Ticket Hotline is your hero, my hero, and everybody's hero, celebrating his 25th consecutive season of covering Football Club Dallas. It's the amazing Buzz Carrick from ThirdDegree.net.
Hi, Peter. It's nice to hear you celebrate my 25th season by offering Kenny Cooper to replace me.
Uh-oh. And we did.
Did we lose Buzz? We did lose Buzz.
Man, he was... See what you did,
What did you do?
Peter?
My fault. Hold on. I'll get him back.
All right, get him
see
back.
See what you did?
Buzz.
So, Buzz's 25th season, this is season 27 for MLS?
Yeah, he started that website the second full season of the Dallas Burn, I believe is what
so
it was.
So it's his 25th anniversary, 26th season then.
I don't know. Man, dude, don't ask me to do that kind of math. I think that's a big deal. It is. Buzz doesn't do this for money. He does it because this is his passion and he loves it. And there's not a lot of guys in this league that can spend 20 minutes talking about the club's first season 25 years ago and then spend another 20 minutes rattling off an improv speech about this current crop of academy stars down to the U-13s. Buzz, are you back with us?
Yes, indeed, I'm here.
Okay, sorry for that faux pas. We hung up on you.
That was a bit we're doing, so like to scare you that we really were cutting you off.
I thought maybe you were going to bring in Kenny Cooper to replace me.
that was the bit. If you for a split second thought that, then the bit paid off.
Bits are fun. Hey, Buzz, you know, we are now here. The team kicks off against Toronto here at 4 o'clock, and the game is on Channel 21. But I keep seeing in all of this impressive new media promotion or marketing promotion that I see of the game and the team, they keep pushing this idea of a new era. And for those who are P1s but not super tight into FC Dallas, what do they mean by that? Why is this a new era?
Yeah, ordinarily you might take that kind of tagline as a marketing bit, but to be fair, from the people that are close observers of this club, there really is something different happening with FC Dallas. On the field, they've taken the money they've earned from selling Ricardo Pepi, and they've invested it in players at a level we've never seen before here, a significant shift in the amount of spend they're doing. But also in many, many phases of the organization, from visible ways like new advertising and banners and billboards and new employees and new positions that have been hired and new improvements for the players at the facility, the development of new departments, and even raises and just increased funding from many departments in the organization. So they really aren't kidding when they say it's a new era. There's definitely changes happening at FC Dallas.
So from the perspective of when all this translates to wins and a trophy, I guess, you know, it takes a little bit of time for all these things to take effect and things to come together. And so we should be patient at first, I'm assuming, early on, or?
Yeah. Well, we made a bit out of it, but there was a press conference, you know, when the new coach took over, where they talked about the amount of time and the process that it would take to get progress on the field. And that's true because a lot of the investment in the system here, the way it works of bringing along the younger players, we're at a phase where there's three or four younger players that are now ready to become the big time focuses of this team. And yet just being the focus isn't enough. You need to play in over a couple of seasons and improve. There's a difference between a 22-year-old and a 27-year-old in terms of their ability to be MVP level players. So that takes time. And then on top of that, you have to bring in the kind of players that fit the coach's system, and you have to learn how to play together. You know, and sometimes you bring in guys that don't work out. So the whole thing's going to take a little bit of time. Those of us that are around the team a lot, we like the moves that they've made, and we think there's a step in the right direction happening, but they're not going to be MLS contenders overnight because they don't spend $30 million on players, which is an exaggeration, of course. Nobody does in this league. But, you know, they still are the Hunts. They still are operating in a relatively budget-conscious manner. They just increase the budget by a large amount for them.
All right. So the big off-season news, like you said, was the sale of Ricardo Pepi for $20 million. Now there's cash in the bank. Let's go out and spend this because we keep telling everybody we're going to. And two really critical things happened. One wasn't just the $7.5 million fee of transfer fee alone to bring up this kid from Argentina, Alan Velasco, who will be here next week. Was a really highly promising young Argentinian winger. He's probably one of the top five Argentinian wingers down there. But I thought equally important was Dallas's very, at least unusual for them, trading for Paul Areola, a national team player, to play on the other side of the field.
Yeah, it's a new day in terms of internal league movements with the amount of money people are willing to spend to get players. And Areola's acquisition was a league record of $2 million, which is a lot of money, even if it's not but money on paper. It's still a significant investment in a player. But that's a player that the coach knew from his time with the national team. It's a player that has some leadership that he felt like the team needed. It's a player that better fits the particular system he wants to play. And that's a lot of the moves they've made this year about getting guys that fit the style the coach wants to do. So some of the transformation is just going to be in getting the appropriate guys to build your base to then move forward on top of.
So playing with them up front, two players that we've been following for a long time, they're academy products. One, we like to call him our favorite player of the show. Peter, I think you agree with me. That's Paxton, right? At least
he's
mine. And then the other one is Jesus Ferreira, not playing the nine, which we've thought all along was his best position. It looks like he's going to play the nine. But Peter, off air with me, has talked about how important this year, and you could talk about this a little bit more, Peter, how important this is this year is for Paxton. This is kind of the year for him. But I would even take that a little further and say how important his performance is to the team this year. Like, he is almost the key guy when they have the ball. And like his success is key to the success to this team, right? This year.
Yeah, he's going to fill the same role that, in a relative terms, that Kevin De Bruyne fills for Manchester City. His ability to connect from the central part of the field into the offensive end of the field, his ability to make game-breaking dribbles and passes, his ability to rise above in the big moment and make the big kind of play. Those are the kinds of things that we expect from him, and he's been capable of doing his whole career. But now there's nobody else. He's the guy. And you're looking at a dude whose reputation has been damaged because of his inability to stay healthy the last few years. He got through the season last year unscathed for the most part, but that was the comeback sort of season. And you know, when you have these major injuries, it often takes a whole season before you're really back. And last year they protected him and had him outside. So this year now he's in the middle. This year he's the quarterback. He's the point guard, if you will. And everything is going to revolve around him and his ability to manage the game. And that's the biggest part of his progression that he needs to develop. This is wisdom and understanding of advanced game controlling play.
All right. So replacing Pepe at the nine is Jesus, who plays that position very differently. And we were all clamoring about Jesus's game at the end of last season, but he was playing a very different position. And so I'm wondering, are we convinced that Jesus can play this style of number nine and end up being a team leader in goal scoring?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest questions for the team this year, because this will be the way Jesus plays for the national team, which a lot of people want to call it a false nine. The coach pushed that back a little bit and said the biggest difference is that he's involved in the build-up play, which means that he will come back and make combinations for the team to get forward. And part of the reason they went out and got different wingers is because the wingers have to adapt and play differently when you have this kind of nine, a nine whose movement is going to create space and create gaps and create opportunities for other players to move into. And yet he still needs the quickness and the burst to be able to get back into those holes as well and be in the box to knock in those goals when they need to be in there. Jesus has been productive playing this way. Back in 2019, you remember, he had a really good season doing that. This is the way he played all through his days in the academy. So he knows how to do it, and he's been successful doing it his whole career up until the point that he wasn't playing that position. But now they're putting him back in what most people would say is where he's always been playing. And so the club is optimistic that he'll be able to do it. Whether he does or not is going to go a long way to determining the success of this season.
All right, Buzz, we don't have too much time left, but I feel like this is the opportunity for us to do what everybody on the radio likes to do, is predict. And I'm going to let Andy go first. Andy, where do you think Football Club Dallas will end up this year in the standings?
That's a great question.
Were you not prepared for this?
No, I was. I've been doing a lot of thinking about it. No. I bet Buzz will agree with me that it is hard to predict when you get a new coach like this with new system and new everythings, but a lot of things are improved but a lot of same pieces are carrying over. Where does that translate to where they finish in the standings? And I'm going to say they sneak into the playoffs and finish seventh, even though I predict Buzz will say ninth. What do you have, Buzz?
You're predicting Buzz's prediction?
Yeah, I am. I'm predicting seventh.
I'll let Buzz go last. Okay. I'm going to go next. Now, here's the thing. I have spent many years complaining and fussing about how this club is run, right? And how they fail to acquire and fail to do this and fail to do that. In the eve of the start of a new season, when they have begun to turn things around and do things the way I want them to do it, it would be hypocritical for me to do anything other than predict a fourth place finish and an appearance in the Western Conference Finals.
We just said how it might take a little time here.
That's what you guys are talking about.
Okay.
I'm trying to be optimistic, Andy. Look at me being optimistic, Pete.
All right. Whatever.
Sorry for ruining the season already. I put the hex on it.
Yeah.
Buzz, what's your prediction?
Yeah. Peter drank the Kool-Aid, and Andy's bad at predicting what Buzz will predict. I have been also at seventh.
Oh, all right, Buzz.
Too many questions up the spine, a little bit of youth up the spine, but still
haters.
Good moves are happening back in the positive direction. They'll be in a fight right to the end. I think they'll get it right at the end of the season. They'll get the seventh spot.
All right, Buzz.
I'm glad
you are the expert and you agree with my prediction. That is a feather in my cap.
Hey, Buzz, it's on your 25th anniversary. Take a couple of minutes to pimp your Patreon and stuff, please, sir.
Okay, well, you can always find our work at thirddegree.net, and we're a podcast, Third Degree the Podcast. And if you enjoy what you find, you can support us at patreon.com/thirddegree. You get a little extra bonus for doing that. And we would love anybody's support out there. We also sell some t-shirts and stuff if you want to buy those.
All right. That is the amazing Buzz Carrick, celebrating his 25th season of covering FC Dallas. Thanks, Buzz. Always love having you on the show, dude.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, because the new season of Major League Soccer has begun, yes, we are going to spend a segment talking about Major League Soccer next here on the Kick Around. There are now multiple little tweets and reports that Bielsa has set himself up to resign from Leeds by mutual consent. I've seen it on Talk Sport, Twitter account, 90minute.com, and a couple of other places. I haven't seen it officially anywhere else, but I have a feeling by the time we all go nighty-night or wake up tomorrow morning, our favorite coach in the whole world will be
not coaching. Bad. Now the bat signal goes up for Jesse Marsh, or what? Or are you saying Jesse Marsh might turn it down? Because there was talk he might come to MLS.
No, I think Jesse Marsh takes
has
that
has to take day. It, right? Yeah.
I think he's making a career mistake in doing that, but it's one of those deals where if you get the chance to go coach a team in the Premier League, you do it no matter how bad the situation is, I guess. That's the thinking. Yeah. But I don't know. I think you're sealing your fate if you do that. Again, if you weren't paying attention, Leeds lost again today at home against Tottenham 4-0. They had shipped 14 goals in three games, and Bielsa just kept pushing more and more players forward, and you don't do that against Harry Kane and Son, because they will make you pay, and they did today. All right, it is another season of Major League Soccer. It is here. We have the TVs on behind us over on Univision. LAFC is currently beating Colorado 2-0. Columbus is leading Vancouver at halftime 2-0, and Philly and Minnesota started the season with a 1-1 draw. Dallas kicks off at 4 on Channel 21. Mm-hmm. Andy, you and I have been here, a part of this league in various shapes and ways and forms, literally since day one.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There are now generations of people who have grown up with this league in existence. We are really at a critical venture for this league moving forward, because their media deal runs out at the end of this year. Mm-hmm. We're all waiting on with pins and needles, finding out what kind of monster deal or they do or don't get. With the World Cup coming to the United States or North America in 2026, and the talk that maybe there's some sort of merger looming with Liga MX.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are a lot of people that aren't fans or have not bought into watching the league. But there are a lot of reasons, if you're a fan of the sport, to maybe set aside some of the prejudices you may have about it and consider maybe it's worth following.
Yeah, the next 4 years, from this season through the 2026 World Cup, are going to be the most critical years in I guess, I don't want to say the history of U.S. soccer, but of the professional league in this country. Especially if they can get a decent TV deal. And it all comes down to that.
Right.
What kind of TV deal? Because if they get a... And I think they will, by the way, because it's the 2026 World Cup coming, and they're going to package this league... what is it? Leagues Cup together with it. And it's just more inventory for television. They're going to really pack... I think they're going to package regional matches,
yes,
that would normally be on regional TV now are going to be packaged.
Part of the package as well. And along with MLS Next, which is the essentially Premier League 2, their subdivision.
So the inventory is going to be huge, which means they'll get more money. And with that money, then they will reinvest. And I think the product of the league is going to go up too. That what we see on a weekly basis on the field is going to improve. And by the time the 2026 World Cup gets here, the national team, young players, they say that the group behind this team is even better, national team-wise, mm-hmm. and it all ties into MLS, because it's just the soccer product, the national soccer product, the standard just gets higher and higher.
So many people listening may not be paying attention, but in the last couple of weeks, the CONCACAF version of Champions League has been taking place. And, you know, if you love the Champions League over in Europe, well, there's a version of that here on our side of the globe between teams that play in our region. So currently there are multiple Major League Soccer teams that have qualified for Champions League. Andy, you are actually professionally involved in those games. You were a match official for one just the other day. Not the referee, the match official. You're like the guy in the suit, commissioner, the tie and everything, all that stuff. And right now, and in a tournament that historically Major League Soccer struggles in, because it always tends to happen at the beginning of the season, they're actually playing quite well right now.
They are. I was in Seattle. That Seattle looked really good against a okay team from Honduras, Motagua. But more importantly, you had teams like Montreal beating Santos, Liga MX Santos.
Yeah.
Pretty like 3-0 at home. You had, well, New England advanced because of
the Haitian team couldn't get their visas.
Right. But New York City looks really good. And, you know, they're, I think, one of the favorites to win MLS Cup again. They got by a Costa Rican team. The Sounders easily got by Motagua. So they are saying now that a lot of people feel this is the year. We've said it before. This is the year that an MLS team will win Champions League. Why that is important is just shows you the progress and where we come. The rap on MLS has and the MLS teams in Champions League and how they compare to Liga MX is they can match Liga MX teams 1 through player 13, 14. It's like player 15 through 22 is where they've always had an issue with because they lack depth. But now the academy system has gotten to a point where they're able to provide MLS teams with the depth that they haven't had before. And we see it here locally. I mean, it's with one of the best academies, but there are other teams in MLS that have had success with their academies as well. And that has been a key development.
One of the interesting storylines that continues to happen around the league is the willingness of some teams, because, you know, it is in theory a salary capped league, like many other American professional sports leagues. But there are also these little side rules that allow teams to spend outside of the cap and so forth. So Toronto, the team that Dallas is playing, has gone out and signed Insigne, the Italian striker who's going to come play for Toronto starting after the summer. And they're paying him an asinine amount of money. They didn't pay a transfer fee for him. Mm-hmm. They're paying him like $12 million a year in salary, which is a crazy number. We're starting to see rumors that Busquets is interested in coming and playing over here. Neymar threw out something the other day that he'd like. Now, here, so this all sounds great, but I got to tell you, when I see that type of player wanting to come here, I cringe, because that's the kind of thing that I think holds the league back. I know it's good for selling tickets.
Well, Insigne is not, you know.
I don't know, man. I got to wait and see how a 33-year-old dude handles travel and everything. This is.
Yeah, true. And we've seen an MLS. Those teams that have spent money on good young internationals, they've had success with those. Look at Seattle. Lodeiro is older now, but he was young when he came, and he's meant so
Rui
much
Diaz,
to that club.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. So I agree, but sometimes I think this is what's going to change. Is I think as MLS, as the standard gets better and the league becomes more high profile, the older, quote, 30 to 32, 33-year-old players that come with a name are going to be a better quality 30 to 32-year-olds that we've been getting in the past, are going to be players that could still be playing in Europe.
Okay, fair enough.
We're going to start to see that. Shaqiri was, by the way, playing at the Premier League, you know, 6 months.
Yeah, Shaqiri's playing for Chicago this year. They've signed him from whatever club he was playing at last.
And that's because he wasn't getting enough minutes at Liverpool. But that's Liverpool. He could have been playing in continental Europe without issue.
Well, when we were talking to Buzz last segment, I mentioned that Dallas went out and spent a record amount. The Dan and Clark Hunt literally spent $7.5 million for a transfer fee to bring a kid up from Independiente in Argentina called Alan. His name is Alan Velasco. And he is a very, very highly rated. It's a kid that was on the radar of many European clubs. And he's 19 years old. He's a winger. And he is highly regarded in Argentina. And now he's coming to play in Frisco. Now, he's 19. He's never played outside of Argentina. There are so many factors in how that translates to playing in a foreign land. Yeah. We just don't know.
It's up to the player. We've had players go one way, and we've had players go the other way. Right.
And but that makes me excited to know that that kind of that prospective mm-hmm. superstar is playing here versus kind of some sort of aged out old name.
Right.
That's
yeah.
where that's what I'm interested in the league
that at least
fostering.
Your team and your team specifically is going for youth as opposed to the older guy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's the other issue in Toronto with he's making, I don't, you know, his salary is what did like you
12,
say?
15
yeah.
million bucks a
and
year
then you,
or something
you
like
have
that.
Some guys on the roster playing next to him making 65,000 a year. Right. And so that's not that it's like that 65, he doesn't feel he's a $12 million player, clearly the $65,000 player, but he's like, is there such a difference between that guy and me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if that causes any issues in the locker room, but you have to be careful about that. And that's something Bob Bradley's going to have to manage.
It's one of the weird positions that I always find myself in, especially as the host of this soccer show. And I don't know if you feel the same way, is that we get caught in the middle between P1s that do watch Major League Soccer or FC Dallas fans, and then the other ones that just have no, that absolutely don't, not only do they not care about it, some of them are adamantly against it because of its structure yeah. and all of that stuff and what it means in the system. And I really wish I could figure out a way for us to be a person that fosters more people wanting to watch it. Because I know it's not the Premier League. I know mm-hmm. it's not a top five league, but there is a lot of entertainment value in yeah. the league.
Plus, it's our national league.
Yes,
you
exactly.
know, and look, you have... It's not, Rome wasn't built in a day, and we've talked about this before. It's going to take a while for it to get to the point. But if you step back and you were there in 96 mm-hmm. and where we are today, you know, 10 teams versus 28, and just the quality of play has improved so much. The product has improved a lot. The stadiums are great, you know, so hey. We just need more eyeballs.
Amen, my friend Andy. High five. All right. FC Dallas kicks off at 4:00 on Channel 21 against Toronto today. Good luck on the new season. All right. When we come out, come back from break, sit tight, get the kids and the family around the radio. Andy and Peter break out their geopolitical footballing knowledge next here on the Kick Around.
On Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310.
All right. Before we get into our geopolitical footballing genius and America's favorite soccer segment, you want me to tell you a quick self-deprecating story?
I love self-deprecating stories coming
from you. So last weekend, I was sitting on the floor texting a friend of mine. Dog is sitting next to me on the floor, and I send my text. And I set the phone on the floor when I reach over and I start petting my dog. Now, Andy, I know you're a dog person, and I've seen you do this with other people's dogs. You and I, and many people who are dog people alike, when you're petting and having a nice, sweet moment with a dog, you tend to talk in baby talk to your dog. Hey, puppy yeah. dog. How you doing, little puppy dog?
Oh, yeah.
Who doesn't love the little puppy
That's
dog?
That's right.
Well, my little girl, Lucy, is on the floor, zonked out, mm-hmm. and I'm giving her some sweet pets and
sweet
talking
puppy talk.
Sweet puppy dog talk,
uh-huh.
only to realize that in the process of doing that, I've somehow hit the microphone button to dictate what I'm saying that turns into a text that ends up getting sent to my friend, who's very confused as to why I'm saying, oh, what's up, sweet Lucy? Have you had a hard day, poor little thing? Did you play left ball today? I am horny. No, that didn't get saved there. So that actually happened to
Did
me.
You get a reply?
He was very confused, needless to say, but I explained it to him and got away with it.
It's a great excuse if you send a tweet or a text to somebody and they take it the wrong way. You can always come back and say, oh, sorry, my microphone was on. I was talking to my puppy dog.
Sweet talking the yeah. puppy dog. What a weird way to talk to your dog. All right, let's do it. It's America's favorite soccer segment, The Dribble. Okay, for The Dribble today, we need to talk about what is happening with war.
Okay.
What is it good for? Andy, when Russia invaded Ukraine, I sent you a text in the hours after that because I was legitimately
alarmed.
I was legitimately concerned because everything's got to be about soccer.
Yes.
Because I'm one of these people who are convinced that this isn't this doesn't stop in Ukraine, that Mr. Yeah. Putin's got larger plans at play.
Right. So, stop there.
Okay.
So, There are bombs dropping in Ukraine. Tanks are rolling. The world is stressed out and mourning about what is happening here. And you send me a text that says, hey, is the World Cup going to get canceled now?
Bringing it back to sports.
Joey Behar may worry about her trip to Italy. I wonder of the implications about the World Cup.
Right.
Because the World Cup is going to happen at the
Nine
end of November.
Away.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So let's, before we get to that extreme,
yeah,
let's talk about the more immediate future, because there are still European, you know, there are still qualifying games. There's a whole playoff round about to happen for European teams.
Yeah.
And ironically include Ukraine and Russia.
Yes, right. And club teams that are playing in
Champions League
as well. And that's the most immediate thing that happened was a Russian team had to play a Europa League game on the road in Spain. And so there was a little attention paid to that. And that game was drawn 0-0. Nothing came out of that. Obviously, that was just a club team. The team didn't have to go to Russia and play. They played in Spain. But Champions League then got enough pressure from host federations, national team federations, to move the finals out of Moscow, because the finals of the St. Petersburg, sorry. They were going to be played in St. Petersburg. And so the first decision that soccer, quote, made was to move that final to Paris. And that was decided like 48 hours ago, I think.
Right.
Right? But now the national teams that are playing against Russia in this playoff round to determine who goes to the World Cup.
So in that particular bracket, it's Russia, Sweden,
Poland, and the Czech Republic. Now,
Poland. Oh,
yeah,
no.
Poland gets the first game. Like, the way that it's set up, it's they have three groups of four, and those are the four teams in that group, and two teams play each other, and two winners then play each other, and the winner goes on.
Okay.
So Poland has to visit Russia. They have to play in Moscow that first game, while Sweden and Czech Republic will play each other, and then the winner goes on.
Okay. Now, I've read that Sweden has already said they will not play Russia if Russia was to be their next opponent.
So the first thing these teams said, they sent a letter to UEFA and they said, we will not play in Moscow, in Russia. That's the first thing they said.
Mm-hmm.
24 hours later, Poland sent another letter. Poland did. And they said, we won't play Russia, period.
That puts
UEFA in a much more difficult spot. And then Sweden followed up and said, we won't play Russia either.
Because Poland's supposed to play Russia first.
Right, in Russia. So the first message was, we will not play that game in Russia. But now they've said they don't want to play Russia either. So this is difficult now for UEFA. They have three choices. They can say, no, you have to do what you have to do, and you can play the game in Russia. They can have the game played, but move it to a neutral site. Or they can kick out Russia. I don't see that happening. And the middle option, moving the game to neutral ground, was a fairly doable decision, because you can always argue that it's in the interest of safety, right?
Right.
But kicking kicking Russia out of the competition, that's going to be tough. And
we
haven't had this kind of precedence before.
Well, but I thought Yugoslavia got kicked out back prior to that World Cup. I'm pretty sure FIFA kicked Yugoslavia out during that particular war back in the whatever World Cup that was.
When Serbia and Croatia were fighting?
I think so, yeah.
Because we've had issues when countries like England and Argentina were at war right before the 82 World Cup.
Yeah.
And those countries played in the World Cup, and they fought each other like 2 months before. The war ended like a week before the World Cup started. Yeah, that's
war.
England and Argentina. Those are biggies.
It wasn't a real war.
So, man, it's tough. And so I think UEFA is going to kind of play things. They're going to wait to see how things play out right now. But
with Russia being the aggressor in all of this, well, okay, so let's extrapolate this out, because if you, you know, a lot of people are, I don't know if it's hyperbole or if it's just people panicking, but you start talking about, oh, is this the beginning of World War III? Because back in the day, in the late 30s and 40s, when World War II was taking place, soccer essentially, in many ways, just stopped. because people weren't playing anymore. They were being drafted or they were signing up to fight for their country. And all of the, you know, over in England, all of those leagues.
You're talking just, World War II.
Yeah, World War II.
Right.
Just quit.
Yeah, that was a world war.
Right, but that's what I'm saying, and I don't, you know, I'm just asking out loud here because we are on the precipice of a World Cup, and if this conflict gets bigger,
right,
and begins to involve a, you know, a, I mean, Belarus is already involved, but what if they try to push on Poland?
Yeah,
and
your
push
question
on,
is how much more extensive does this war have to get?
Before,
like, how many more countries have to be involved?
Before something I'm really interested in starts getting impacted.
But, yeah.
I'm being silly, but you understand where I'm going.
Well, I'm thinking back when Russia invaded Crimea. What happened?
I don't think there was a tournament going on at that point. I think that happened. No, I take that back. That was 2014, and there was a World Cup. I don't remember how that got handled at the time.
Yeah, and it's almost like if it doesn't impact the venue of the World Cup.
Yeah. It's something to keep an eye on. The most immediate stuff, it's what's happening with the qualification part in UEFA, because Russia and Poland specifically are involved in that. All right. So we'll all keep apprised.
So the other thing to talk about, though, is Ukraine is playing Scotland as
Yeah, right.
And so that game is going to be played in Scotland. But it like, I feel a little bit, you know, feel terrible for the Ukrainians, but this is now, they're going to be the favorites, the world favorites, right? I mean, they're going to be sentimental favorites. And Scotland, here they are for the first time getting this far. Now the world's against them.
Well, you know what? I've read that the Scots have offered to allow them to train over there in advance.
Yeah. No, of course.
They're going to be super sweet about it, as the Scots generally are. All right. The other big, somewhat political news that happened in the world of soccer was the fact, the announcement, that the U.S. Women's National Team lawsuit against the Federation had been settled, and that the U.S. Soccer Federation will pay $24 million as back payment for all of the, unequal salary stuff that's been going on between the men's and women's national team for however long, dating back to the 80s and 90s. And that's a big success. The problem is everybody's celebrating this, but if you just stop and take a second, all of that is predicated on something pretty considerable happening, which is a new collective bargaining agreement being put in place, not just for the women, but also the men with the Federation. Now, this is where I think this gets really complicated. And when I look at this from just kind of a knuckleheaded level, this is one of those things where I begin to wonder if this is a whole lot of be careful what you wish for coming everybody's way. Because the idea that the women and the men now have to find common ground on how to negotiate an exactly the same deal with the Federation,
right,
I think gets really wonky.
Yeah, and the men have been very supportive of the women's cause, right, and of their fight for
other than the
pay.
Fact that I think even to this day they have yet to publicly comment on the settlement of the lawsuit.
Well, what will happen now is, because they really have to have equal pay, the U.S., the men, may have to make a little bit less. And so now is, are they going to be willing to make less to make sure the women make more?
That's why I think this is
right?
going to get messy.
That's what it's going to come down to.
I also am very curious how they're going to solve the quandary of the World Cup winnings issue. Because the women are very insistent that all of that should be equitable. But the reality is that the Federation has no control over how FIFA pays that stuff out.
That's a FIFA matter.
Well, now, so other countries do it this way. They throw everything in a pot, and then they split it equally amongst the genders.
And the men have agreed to this in those countries?
Yes. That's how it's done. Now, I think what's weird about this is that most of those countries, like the United States, don't have really good odds at winning their World Cup. Except here in the United States, it's likely the women have a really good shot at winning the Women's World Cup. Mm-hmm. And now they're going to you know, the money they make from winning the Women's World Cup is only going to get higher because that's starting to get more attention,
right,
and that's going to go up.
But they're still better off splitting it with the men because what the men make just for participating and not even winning the World Cup is still more.
Yeah, unless maybe they don't qualify again.
Oh, that's a great point.
Two times in a row.
It's going to be interesting. So it's not a done deal. By the way, they were looking for $200 million. They got $24 million.
I thought they were looking for $67
million. Oh.
Which would have, $67 million would have bankrupted the Federation.
At one point, it was as high as that, which they brought
down. I think that was Hope Solo.
Okay.
She's crazy.
Hey, by the way, so it was Serbia, not Yugoslavia. That's why when you said Yugoslavia.
Okay.
It was when Serbia was attacking and invading the satellite countries that split up from Yugoslavia. Remember, they went to war with
They got kicked out.
They, because of international sanctions, FIFA kicked them out. They couldn't participate in the 94 World Cup, the 98 Euros. So there's precedence there, by the way.
Okay.
So Russia could get kicked out.
I really hope the good P1s appreciated the brainiac power, the geopolitical brainiac power combined between Andy and I.
My brain is a scrambled egg.
All right, that does it for another fun-filled edition of The Dribble. You think we helped anybody out there?
No, not a one.
That's too bad.
So I'll probably at the FC Dallas game anyway.
Are you heading up to the stadium to go catch the game?
No, the game starts in 20 minutes.
I know. I'm not either. I'm going to go home and watch it for sure. All right. Sam's not here today. We wish him the best with his surgery. Hope that goes well. Jacob Detamore, thank you for good tickers today. Hey, EA. Pulling double duty today, my friend. Good
well
job.
Done.
Yeah.
I killed Sam. That's why.
Oh, is that what it was? We need to get you up on the website. I don't know if we have a show next week. I think there may be a basketball game in our way, but we'll see how it goes. All right, P1s. Hope you enjoy all of that stuff. We love and adore you. Get stuck in and win your 50s.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Park, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM Flower Mound. A Cumulus Media Station.